This is the Triad Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Jason Field with the Downtown Winston-Salem Podcast. Welcome, and we're here with Richard Emmett and Andy Tenniel with the Ramcat. Welcome, Richard and Andy.
Hey, Jason. Happy to be here with you virtually.
Hey, Jason. Thanks so much for having us.
Well, I've known both of you guys for quite some time, but I think a lot of our listeners may not know you, although a lot of them may. But I thought what we wanted to do was to talk about you guys and the Ramcat and how you guys got started, and then later on talk about where you guys are now considering the pandemic, and to share with folks how you guys are doing and any plans that you would like to share. So, but first, Richard, why don't we start with you and tell us a little bit about yourself, like your brief biography and how you got to where you are professionally.
Sure. I grew up in Pittsburgh, PA in the 70s. And so I saw the devastation of the steel industry during that time. And but Pittsburgh has turned into a great city. Went to high school at North Hills High School and played on the 1983 state championship football team. So I was pretty involved in athletics. I went to Penn State University, where I got my master's in public policy and a BS in finance. And then went up to Maine to work at a small research institute for a few years. When I decided I didn't want to be in academia, I had been coming down to Winston-Salem on some business trips and thought it was a great place where I would figure out what I was going to do next. And in the meantime, while I was here, I got a job at the Horse's Mouth Coffee House on 4th Street. And that's how I connected into the arts and to the downtown revitalization scene. I was involved with a downtown music program, many other things, including the Arts Council of Winston-Salem as the chief operating officer during the renovation of the Sawtooth Building to the Rhodes Center for the Arts. And also helped founded a small business music club in the arts district on 7th Street called The Garage, which my wife and I operated for about 12 years before turning it over to Tucker Tharp. And then we were offered the opportunity to do this. And thankfully had Andy and Ledbetter were also interested in, because it was a bear getting started and thinking about doing this. Never would have done it without having those guys as part of a great team that we have here at the Ramcat.
Thank you, Richard. What about you, Andy?
Yeah, I came to Winston in 1996 to come to Wake Forest. I grew up in Florida in a house that listened to a lot of music, and so I was turned on to music very early on. And so I showed up here in Winston in 1996 to go to college, and I think my second or third day in Winston, I walked from the Wake Forest campus to what was Ziggy's on Beatty Street, the end of Beatty Street, and walked in the door and introduced myself to Jay Stevens. I was all of 18, 19 years old, something like that. And said I wanted to work for him and that I loved music. And so he pointed to a pile of probably about 2.5 to 3 feet high of flyers that were on the floor of his office and said, go and put those all over Wake Forest campus and come back when you're done. And so I grabbed the pile of flyers and walked back to Wake and put them up and came back the next day. And Jay didn't believe me that I'd put them up all over campus. And so he sent someone to go and check behind me and see if flyers had been put up. And the guy came back and said, yeah, they're all up. And so he kind of turned to me and said, okay, well, you're hired. And that was kind of my start in the arts and in the music business. I've done jobs all over the music business, from putting up flyers to promoting shows to starting and running a music magazine to taking pictures and being a photographer for various artists and various festivals, curating concert series, and ultimately culminating in opening the Ramcat with Richard and Brian a little over 2 years ago. And I would echo exactly what Richard said. I can't imagine having done this project without those two guys and without everyone who lent a hand in doing this, Jason, you included, and the Downtown Winston-Salem Partnership included. And they say it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a whole bunch of people to get a business like this started. Very, very proud of the effort that's been put together so far, and proud of the people that I did it with. So,
yeah, that's remarkable. For some of the viewers that don't know, or listeners that don't know, when was your opening date?
Our opening date was March 9th, 2018. And it's certainly a night that I will never forget. Richard is laughing, I see on the Zoom, because I know he won't ever forget it. And hopefully a lot of other people won't forget it. It was a really amazing night that was a little bit stressful. And a lot of fun, and just what an amazing amazing night of music to have a bunch of our friends, the Vagabond Saint Society, playing the music of Queen on the stage to Chris and the Ramcat. It was we couldn't have drawn it up any better. It was great.
Yeah, I was there. I had a great time. I was in the balcony on the with my wife and just enjoyed the heck out of it. And it was such a feeling of community and just vibrancy and packed house. And it seemed like all of my friends showed up for this huge party.
Yeah. It was a special night. It was a little stressful. You know, we were putting the finishing touches on a lot of things, you know, within the hour of doors opening. That's how those things happen. I've never been a part of an opening or of any kind that, you know, it just went completely smoothly. So I don't know if that's indicative of me and maybe I'm the commonality in those experiences, or if it's just the fact that it's really hard to do something like that and hit a bullseye right out of the gate. But it was a great night. I enjoyed it a lot.
Richard, do you remember that night?
It kind of blends together with the whole week leading up to it. Because like Andy said, there was a lot of extra hours and late nights and early mornings getting ready, but absolutely it was exhausting and thrilling, and felt really good to have a lot of the community that supports us here to celebrate what we had done to kind of remake this place and have that band on stage, community musicians. It was a great, great feeling.
Yeah. I mean, it really was. And I have to say, I mean, that's why we all kind of get into this, and we all, at least I did, as just to be a part of a small part of the community that gets to be a part of this. And, you know, it goes back to many times. I think you guys have been very involved in promoting music and arts in the community for so long. You are so modest, both of you guys. And I'm going to draw this out of you. And I know you guys are modest people, but I'll start with you, Andy. One of the things that people don't recognize about you is that you work already in the music industry as a professional manager and promoter and photographer, and have had your work profiled in many different places in the world of music and all kinds of mediums. And I know that you're a modest person, but please don't be here. Share us a little bit about what you've done in your professional career, Andy, and then we'll get to Richard too.
You know, I think the commonality across all of it, Jason, is that I love music, and I figured that out fairly early on. Like I said, working for Jay at Ziggy's and getting to interact with musicians very, very closely, and watching Jay run his business and run a club that was a legendary music spot I was in college, supposedly going to these classes, but I was really getting a pretty good education on, you know, the music business at a very grassroots level by watching what was happening there. And so that was hugely influential and impactful to me. And at the same time that I was doing that, I was writing about music for a lot of arts and entertainment weeklies here in the Piedmont Triad, and then kind of graduated to music, national music magazines and more national level publications. But all of that was done while I was here, and in my first job at the High Point Enterprise as a general assignment reporter, I was kind of doing that stuff in my off time. And about the same time that I actually met Richard was very, soon after, kind of, I want to say 2000-ish was the time that Richard and I first met. Maybe it was before that. He might remember more clearly than I, but as I was kind of pursuing a newspaper career after I graduated from college, I was doing the magazine writing on the side and kept getting paired up with kind of crummy photographers and thought, okay, well, here's an opportunity to learn something that I already was interested in, photography, and pair it with something that I was already doing, getting paid for, which was writing. And it worked. And so a lot of the magazines that I was working for at the time said, oh, great. Yeah, we'll pay you for the photos too. And then ultimately moved to California to kind of pursue a little bit more of those opportunities in the Bay Area. And at some point in time, and I can't really tell you when it happened, everything kind of seesawed a little bit in the sense that I wasn't doing as much writing or I guess maybe more that the photography gigs were coming in more frequently or paying more. I can't really remember. And ultimately kind of culminating in being in Austin, Texas for the Austin City Limits Music Festival and happened to meet a guy named Tony Dimitriotis, who is a very famous music manager, Los Angeles based, and most prominently connected with Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. And they were the headliners that year at the festival. And through just a complete coincidence, we got to talking, and he asked if I was shooting the festival. I said I was. He asked if I was shooting the Heartbreaker set. Being a credentialed journalist, said, of course, I'm going to be photographing that. I'm a credentialed photographer. And he said, well, there's actually only four or five people that we've approved, and you're not on the list. But I'll put you on the list. And so I was able to photograph the band, and I, again, happened to meet them right before they went on stage. Tony introduced me to them. I shot the set, sent him a thank you note, because that's what kids who were raised in the South by good women do, and wrote them a thank you note and said, here are the photos, and here's this one of Mike Campbell, extraordinarily high res, do with it what you want. If I never do this again with you guys, this was an honor. And push came to shove, I think, and they ended up liking the picture of Mike and got it printed and framed and put in their offices. And so a couple of years later, I got a call right around the Mojo Tour timeframe asking if I was interested in possibly coming and working with those guys. And that kind of launched that aspect of my career with the Heartbreakers and doing kind of the touring photography thing.
Well, that's remarkable. It's really, when I talk to people, a lot of it's about putting people out there. It's a good story for people about putting yourself out there and going places and meeting people, and you just never know what's going to happen. And in life, same things happen for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. No, I think you're right. I think it's, it was a lot of luck, some luck. And I think every situation has a little bit of luck involved. At the same time, always write a thank you note. It's maybe a lesson to learn from that situation. And then pick up the phone at 10:30 on a Wednesday night in the South, because normally it's bad news, but it might be Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers inviting you to go on tour with them. That would be a predictor on that one.
I think Tom Petty is from Gainesville, Florida, right?
He is. And in fact, one of the first times that we sat and talked, that was one of the immediate connections between the two of us. He kind of looked at me and said, where are you from? And I said, Florida. And he said, where? And I said, Tampa. And he's from Gainesville, which is also in Central Florida. And my uncle went to U of F. I've spent a lot of time around Gainesville, spent a lot of time around Ocala and kind of that north central part of Florida, which Tom and all those guys spent a lot of time around. So I feel like, when I got to first meet them and they saw that I was a Florida kid, they were like, oh, okay, we get this guy.
Have you seen the Florida Gator football games where they sing one of the songs during the third, fourth quarter break?
Yeah, I went back down. They started doing it right after he passed. It was like that next Saturday, and I remember getting the video from, I guess it was Tony or somebody in their office saying, look what happened today in Gainesville. And it was unbelievable. It was so cool.
Yeah, that was really sad, his passing. I know you had to take it really hard, and I'm sorry about that. And it's a remarkable story. And I think if it's okay, I'm going to reach out to Richard and kind of talk to him about some of his experiences. He kind of glossed over, and I want to draw at it, Richard, a little bit. Some of the things that he's so modest about is that Richard, a lot of people don't know this, but you know, he was involved in music in our summer music series, which is would be our 24th year now. And we were going to do a big event on April 30th, which got hijacked by the coronavirus with the Vagabond Saint Society. And they were going to do a tribute to Van Morrison, and all of that was going to be a lot of fun. And we're just about to announce that and go public with it when all of this kind of came out of the woodwork. And but Richard, tell us about those early days of working in the summer music series, and what was that like, and some of the people that you're working with, and where was it done, and how often was it? People would be surprised to hear some of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think Brian Cole's company, and Brian was the one who asked me to be part of the downtown music program. They were the ones that the city hired to come in and do that. It was based on the model down in Greenville, South Carolina. And I was hired to do the programming and help Molly Yarbrough at the time, now Molly Davis, with the promotions. It's when we started out, it was, I think, you know, 40 or 50 nights during the summer from like May through September or early October. We had Thursdays Alive After Five in Corporating Plaza, then Friday night Jazz and Blues. It was called 4th Street Jazz and Blues at the time. It was right on 4th Street before a lot of the businesses came after that. And then the following year, the summer on trade program started on Trade Street to help promote and bring people down to the Arts District. And it was, you know, it was really great to be involved in using music to bring people down and experience a downtown that was still kind of sleepy, and to get them to understand it was still a great downtown and that there were many things that could happen here. And I think 21 years later, that's definitely proven to be the case. We've had some great artists that played at that the downtown music series. Doc Watson performed a couple times. Charlie Louvin performed, and there were just lots of great Walter Wolfman Washington and blues artist on 4th Street. And so a lot of great nights. I remember getting rained on a lot the first couple years. Very minimal stage coverings, pushing the stage down the street to the old Woolworths building where we stored it. It was a lot of physical work, but it was very fulfilling and people came out and enjoyed it. And I probably met half the town that way.
Yeah, I mean, everybody knows you, Richard, and I remember meeting you when I first got here in 06, and I think you were pretty new with the garage then, and I had met you, and I really, when I first met you, I didn't really understand, you know, I was meeting so many people, it was like drinking water through a fire hose, but I just had no idea the first time I met you how much I would get to know you, and just enjoy my interactions with you. And then you moved away for a bit of time, and I thought we lost one there. I was like we need you, know, it was just but then you came back and you were working with the Arts Council, and I don't know if you guys remember, we were on a committee, I don't know what year this is, I mean it was Milton and Rhodes and you and Andy and a few other people were talking about we need more live music. And I forget who was working on it, but we did some on-street stuff, some buskers.
Yeah.
But then we also talked about we need a live music performance. And then it was a time before really the fellows that are behind Innovation or Industry Hill and Hank Gersmeyer and Drew Gersmeyer and and Hank had really started doing a lot of stuff north. And I remember saying to you guys, we ought to look at the big Winston warehouse. And but that's not where ultimately they built the first Ziggy's property. But do you guys remember that conversation in time?
I think that was that committee with you, Andy, and Caleb Cottle and others that Milton put together as part of various committees on different arts disciplines in the city. I think that was responsible for Ziggy's opening downtown, and then therefore 7 years later us being able to open the Ramcat in the old Ziggy's 2.0 building. What do you think, Andy?
Yeah, no, I mean, a couple of weird things came out of that that task force. The guys who started the Orange Peel came to town and did a presentation about starting the Orange Peel, which I remember pretty vividly. I met Caleb really at that during that task force because, as he tells it, I think, everyone was there. He was the last one to walk in the room. And when he looked up, the only empty seat was next to somebody that he thought was pretty close to his age. So he walked over and sat next to me. And then also I feel like, Richard, that was when we started to talk. And I feel like, Jason, to your point about the big Winston warehouse, not too long after that, Richard, was that initial meeting where we looked at the plans that they had for the big Winston warehouse. The first set of plans. Yeah. And so, yeah, Jason, I remember that task force, you know, vividly. I think we got the busking permit. We got the YMCA to agree to allow musicians to use their showers and their bathrooms.
That's right. That was good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then musicians. Yeah.
Yeah, and then there was something else, and I can't remember what the third one was. Maybe it was like a discount hotel with one of the hotel properties in the city or something like that. But I remember there were a couple of big victories, and then it was kind of like, okay, what do we do now?
Hey, just a quick break. Don't skip ahead, because if you like this show, then we want you to support those that make the Triad Podcast Network possible. And all of our podcasts are presented by The Ginther Group, a Triad real estate team with a vast local knowledge that you can also hear as our experts right here on the Triad Podcast Network. They provide evaluations to list and market homes for this spring season. And with a new reality we're all facing from the coronavirus pandemic, The Ginther Group has implemented strategies to adapt a virtual process. So if you're thinking of buying or selling a home in our community, just have a conversation with the Ginther Group and learn how they can help. Call them at 336-283-8689 or find them online at theginthergroup.com. GINTHER, theginthergroup.com. Now back to the show.
And so you guys were really behind the scenes, and when, you know, things, we won't dwell on, you know, Ziggy's closing. But, you know, that was a point where that was kind of a downtime. We were talking, you know, that we were losing this major music venue, and a lot of people were very critical. It was an often talked about thing in the news and social media. I remember getting a lot of questions from the newspaper and critical questions like, we lost a huge asset and now what are we going to do? And then I remember just talking to you guys and, you know, talk about that kind of germinating. I mean, you guys were already, and I guess I wanted to paint the picture that you guys were already in the community. You knew this. I mean, so it wasn't a big leap. It was just, it's a big decision to make.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if I could kind of see some signposts, I think that that task force was certainly one of them, kind of the early side of it. Richard and I collaborated, I think this is right, Richard, on a couple co-presented shows at SECA.
Yep.
Where Blue Ridge Music Center and the Crossroads programs, Crossroad at SECA series, kind of overlapped, and we did some co-promoted events. And then I think it was, you know, we saw what happened here and the loss of the venue and the loss of that asset in the community. And it was like, well, we got to do something about this. And if we can figure this out, you know, let's try and do it. And I think at the same time, both of us individually were getting contacted by people saying, are you guys going to do something about this? Because we think you're the right people to do something about this. And so every time Richard and I would run into each other, we'd kind of compare notes as to, says, someone's been calling you saying you should do this, because X, Y, and Z's been calling me and saying I should do it. And both of us at that point in time, I mean, Richard, obviously having years of experience at the garage, running that venue, and then kind of my desire, at least, to try and get off the road, you know, for more than 2 months a year, you know, around 16, you know, for about 10 years there, I was out for about 6 to 8 months a year, which was pretty difficult. And so there, I definitely had a desire to try and figure out something more localized to do. And so, I think we just started kind of talking about it. I don't know, yeah. Richard, what do you remember?
Yeah. You know, I will say that it was a exact opposite of the way we started the garage, which was out without any sort of plan, and for it not even really to be a public venue. It was where we were going to hold parties with musicians we knew who were coming through, and then we'd invite our friends to listen, and then, you know, it was forced to become a real business, and we figured it out a couple times before we got it right in 2006 with the help of some investors. So I had been through that once before, and I knew that this initiative, we really had to do some really major budgeting and planning and fundraising. And you know, Andy and I and Led talked about it a lot. We went out and talked to you and other folks in the community about a first draft of a plan, and we came back with a second draft and a third draft and talked with the landlords here about it. I mean, it really was almost a 2-year process before we felt comfortable that we could actually make a go of it and be able to survive the first couple years until we got the momentum going. And so I think we did a pretty good job with that budget and that fundraising and the plan for the venue. And we got a great team on board, and, you know, we were just really starting to feel some incredible momentum. And then the virus came along, and now we're all upside down and figuring out which way's forward.
Yeah. Which might be a good segue into I think one of the things Andy and I were talking about before we started recording is that part of the coronavirus thing is that, you know, there's no real definitive answer about much of anything. A lot of it, and I'm not being critical of anybody, I think that's a very difficult thing considering how, and I'm not trying to be critical with that, but is much of this is about just unanswered questions that particularly business owners would have. And I'm not trying to, it is obvious. It's like, I'm asked a lot of questions and I don't have the answers to some of them. And like, when are we going to open? How's it going to work? What's the new situation going to be like? So I'm not trying to force you guys to answer questions, but I think for us, I think we all just want the Ramcat to continue, and I think everybody wants to be supportive, and I just wanted to see where you guys are at and what kind of things you guys wanted to share with any listeners.
Yeah. It's like you said before we started recording, I think that and it's not just facing the Ramcat, it's facing every business, it's facing every household, every city, every state, every country, you know, across the world. And that is the unknown. If you don't know anything about something, then your natural tendency is going to be apprehension, fear, anxiety. I mean, if you're driving down a road and the road is foggy and you don't have a map or any GPS, you're going to probably drive slow. Your heart might start, you know, beating a little faster. You might start to get a little worried or scared. And I think that's where everyone's at right now. I mean, you know, unfortunately, there's no one who is standing up in the world, because that person doesn't exist, who's saying, I've seen this before, I've lived through it, this is what we need to do. I wish that we had someone saying that, whether that's on the world stage, the national stage, or just the stage here in Winston-Salem or in downtown Winston-Salem. But the fact is, none of us have lived through anything like this. And so planning for it and trying to build a strategy to recover from it, given all of the uncertainty and unknown, is really, really difficult. You know, as Richard said, it took about 2 years to get momentum going. And that's, you know, being a new business and developing relationships with, you know, your audience and with agents and artists and managers, and putting together a staff and getting that staff to run the business, you know, and operate it the way you think it should. And I got to say, you know, we've got the best. We are so lucky. Our staff is incredible, you know, top to bottom. They operate like a seamless group of ninjas, and I love them all, and we treat them, and all of us, you know, I consider all the folks who work here our family, and so I'm excited for the day that we get to have everyone back in the room, you know, and I appreciate you saying that the community wants us here. You know, we feel like we did a pretty good job in the first 2 years. We had our best month ever in February. You know, it was, we were rolling very much in the right direction. And so that's the, you know, the what we're doing now, and what I can share with you is that we're looking at all options. You know, we're looking at reduced capacities. We're looking at, how do you operate in a safe and healthy manner in terms of PPE and all of the things that might be asked of us to operate a business like the Ramcat? We're exploring, you know, Richard has joined or has been kind of the point person on joining the National Independent Venues Association. So we're working with our brothers and sisters across the country who are independent venues, trying to make sure that we're being advocated for, that our voice is being heard, and that we might have some influence on the guidelines for which we reopen by. You know, we're doing the live stream thing. We'll have our next episode, our the Home Sweet Home series on Saturday, I think. We've launched a movie series, which has gone pretty well and that people seem enthusiastic about. And so while we're doing all of these things, you know, we're examining, you know, what it would look like at 25% capacity, 50% capacity, half the staff, double the staff, you know, all of the different variables in terms of operating the business, both internally within the building, Gas Hill and the Ramcat, as well as perhaps maybe doing some stuff outside. And then also, you know, trying to be present on trying to advocate and work with the NEPA folks and make sure that we're represented nationwide, and then developing our own content. So we're doing a lot of different things, I feel like. At the same time, we're waiting to see what the guidelines and restrictions are going to be put in place for a business like us to reopen and how we do that.
Yeah. I mean, I'd reiterate a couple of things I would say are that, you know, what's gotten me through, cause you know, seeing your business close down for a couple of months and not having any revenue, not knowing where that money is going to come from or what you have to pay out. We really have a great community. I mean, our landlords have been understanding. The downtown partnership has been understanding. A lot of our creditors have been understanding. Like Andy said, we have gotten together with our fellow venue, independent venue operators around the country and here in North Carolina. And so getting to know them and being able to talk with them and hear from them and be directed to resources that have been helpful to us have been great. And even here in the city, the Mask in the City project, and we haven't taken the training yet, but the city is, you know, out in the forefront of putting training out for small businesses and all businesses to help reopen. And so I think all those things have been really positives. We even got a really nice anonymous donation to help us, to help tide us over, you know, I mean, you know, and that's really helpful. The community came together and gave over $6,000 to our employee Venmo tip pool that we are passing out to our employees that are furloughed. I mean, all that stuff has made me realize once again how wonderful this community is and why I like living here, working here, and playing here. And it gives me the positive feeling that I want to tackle this and be able to come out on the other side, even though most days when I wake up, I'm like, how the hell are we going to do this?
Yeah, I wake up every day like that, and I was like, do I say the same thing, and I'm like, you know, when is this going to end, and when can we go back to what I wanted? I was thinking back, and I looked up while we were talking about when I went to the Old Crow Medicine Show concert, and that was February 28th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That seems like a trillion years ago. That seems like two lifetimes ago.
Right? Yeah. No, you're exactly right.
That second week in March, the 10th through the 13th or the 9th yeah. through the 13th, that week where every day it was something new and stuff was canceling and we were waiting to hear on things. That was probably one of the craziest weeks of my life.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the impact of the sports and the music and the entertainment industry, it's worldwide. It's unbelievable. It's unfathomable. And I think one of the things that, I'm not saying it gives me comfort, but I'm so used to things that if I can try to play a role, I want to play a role in a problem and solving a problem. And this, when I think about it, I'm like, this is something that I can only do what I can do to help out the businesses that are in or downtown. But man, this is a larger topic. It's worldwide. And just like you said, I think Andy, you said it perfectly. I mean, never happened before in our lifetime.
Yeah. I mean that, and so the times that I get frustrated or get overly anxious about it or, you know, whatever, it's just like, there's only so much you can do. And, some days are easier than others. And I try and constantly remind myself of the Lennon McCartney lyric from Tomorrow Never Knows. And that is, you know, at some point in time, you kind of have to let go, turn off your mind, relax and float downstream. Because, you know, there aren't a lot of certainties and there aren't a lot of answers. And so, you know, when I tend to kind of get down about it or get frustrated about it, I got to remind myself that everyone's in the same boat. This isn't just us. This isn't just the music industry. I mean, the service industry, the entertainment industry, the sports industries were first hit, heavily hit. But this is going to be far reaching. And it's not just going to be those industries or this business or that business. The impact of this thing is going to be felt for generations. And, in terms of this business, we come in every, day with, okay, here's a new thought on this. How do we, let's work through this. Let's think through this. Let's talk through this and figure out, you know, if this were going to be the case, if these were going to be the guidelines, how we'd lay it out in this room, There's no lack of challenges to discuss. it's right full of challenge.
You got that right. I think one of the things that people need to understand that it is totally normal to be going through this. I remember the first week I felt like I was under assault, and I remember just being so, even the first 2 weeks, I don't think I felt, at the end of the day, I was so exhausted, and it was a process. And now, I just feel like I'm anxious. I want to get out there and do something. And I just feel like I'm ready at the gate. 2 months is a long time. But music in and of itself, if you think about the spirit of music, I've listened to a lot of music over the last 2 months. And I can't even begin to tell you how many musicians that I've explored and discovered and re-explored. I mean, music is something that we need as humans to be around other people and to see their response to music. And you need to be, we're social animals, and you see that in music. I'd love for you guys to talk about kind of what you've thought about that vein, about the need for your venue forever, that this is a temporary moment in time and that music is something that prevails no matter.
Go ahead, Richard. That's all you.
All right.
Yeah, you start.
I will say that, after being, not having any music in this room for 7 weeks, the first time we did a Home Sweet Home shoot and we came in here and there were a couple musicians on that stage playing for just myself and Andy, Brian Dobb, our sound guy, Mike Schmidt, our light guy. It felt so good and sad that we couldn't have anybody in here enjoying it at the same time. But to for us to be in here with our staff, our coworkers, and to have some musicians on stage really uplifted me. And to know that we, have a chance to present these people that are local people in a really, really incredible way, because we have a talented and incredibly creative photographer, videographer, as one of the owners of this business, who makes some incredible videos. You can check them out. They're really good. and a great sound person that makes them sound amazing, that we were able to put that out there. And hopefully we will continue to be able to do that. Learning another way to reach people has made me feel really good. I mean, I've used the arts tons, whether it was movies or books or films or videos. I mean, that they soothe my soul and make me feel like I can continue on. If I didn't have that, I've been missing it live, but at least to have it virtually has made life bearable. And hopefully we can get to have those experiences together again, which gives us, makes us a stronger community, I think. And I just can't wait. And although I'm also scared of how it's going to happen and if it's going to be different, and if it's going to be different in a way that can still be great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. I mean, we're in the social gathering business here. It's not a good time to be in the social gathering business. But I think Richard and I and Brian, we've talked about it. There is something special that happens when musicians walk out onto a stage in front of an audience and the lights go down and the amps get turned on and music starts to play. And, to me, that is community. And that's, there's something very, very special that happens in that instance. And I've seen it happen in this room, and I've seen it happen in rooms all around the world. And it doesn't have to be in a stadium full of 80,000 people to happen. It can happen in a room, a tiny little corner bar with, one person on stage playing the guitar and one person out in the audience. I mean, there's something special that happens when people gather to listen to live music. I'm a firm believer in it. And I hope that this experience has emphasized or made a finer point to that fact with a lot of other people. It certainly has with me. I miss it even more now and want it more now than I ever had in my life. And so I guess maybe that's the thing that I hope that comes out of this whole thing, Jason, when you're talking about kind of the importance of music and the ability for music to soothe during distressing times. I hope that when all is said and done, whenever that day is, that we come back in full force. And that, when you go to a concert sometimes and someone will jostle you as they're walking by and someone gets upset about it, and we've seen it here. I've seen it at other venues. I mean, that happens. I hope that that kind of stuff goes away. And I hope that people appreciate community and gathering with other people and that kind of visceral experience of standing elbow to elbow with somebody else and watching an artist, emote on stage and share with you their soul. I hope that everyone really appreciates that, because we don't have it right now. And I think a lot of people miss it. And I'm not just saying that because I'm in the business. I'm saying it because I care about all of the aspects around that experience, all of the people around that experience, and because that experience is vital to my existence.
One of the things I was saying to somebody, I doubt I'm the only person that said this, but not in any way to be critical of virtual, because it's essential and I don't want to be mocking anything. And I just thought it was a funny little saying, but it was one of those things where I said, virtual ain't cutting it.
Right. You're right. And there is only a certain amount of that experience that transitions or that's transmitted to the virtual experience. If virtual's all we got for the next 18 months, I'm going to love virtual. you got to. That's why you got to ride the horse that you got. But I'm with you. I've always been a kind of person that I like being crammed into a sweaty club and that energy and what's created there. I think it's a very special thing. And it can't be replicated online. It's one of those things. It's like catching lightning in a bottle, and you can't manufacture that. You can't, virtual reality that. That's just, that's, that's part of the whole experience. And that's, you know, the people next to you, that's the, you know, it's everything. So, yeah, I'm with you. I've enjoyed the virtual thing. I've enjoyed watching people do the virtual thing, you know, good, bad, or indifferent. I've enjoyed producing something virtual that I think that we can be really proud of. You know, but yeah, I yearn for the day when we have 750 people in that room and someone comes up to me and goes, "It's a little hot in here. Can you turn on the air conditioning?" Because that will mean that there's 750 people in the room and people are elbow to elbow and having a good time. And that's what I'm looking forward to do, is walking into the office and looking at Richard and going, "We can't down the air conditioning anymore. There's just too many people in here."
Yeah. There's so many things I won't take for granted any longer. And I think although we don't know the answer, and we talked earlier about we don't know what the answers are, I don't know what the answers are. And I think one of the things that I've been, not to steer off course, but I think we've gotten, some great conversation here today. And I just want to say, guys, how much I appreciate everything that you guys do, everything that you guys are. And think about you and many of our other downtown stakeholders. I wanted to interview you guys, because I think, you guys are in the social gathering business and are impacted this by, I can't think of too many entities that are going to be impacted more than your business. And I just wanted to talk to you guys and let people, how much I care about you all, and to hopefully have other people hear your voices and hear some fun, some positive about what's going on. I think the inspirational thing you guys have on your signboard that says, "We'll get through this together, community. Winston Strong, see you soon." And we took a picture of that and put it on our Instagram post, and that got, like, I don't know how many, you guys probably did the same thing, but it's just like, man, I got a lot of hits. Mm. And that was like viral.
Well, we've done a couple of those now. One thing I will say, and I'll give it over to Richard, and that is, we've talked a lot about the fact that we don't have a lot of answers today, and that's all well and good. And I think to piggyback on what you were saying, Jason, the one answer that I do have is that it's going to take a community, and this community is a really strong, interesting, vibrant community who looks after one another, who stands up for one another, who, you know, helps people along. And so whether it's businesses here in downtown Winston, specifically in Industry Hill, or just downtown Winston as a whole, or the city of Winston, or your neighborhood, it's all of this is the success, at least in my eyes, of the way we're going to get out of this is by realizing that, we all need to kind of band together and stand strong and help each other out. And if everyone can kind of remind themselves to do that on a regular basis, whether that's supporting a business or going and checking on your neighbor or, volunteering at the food bank, there's going to be a lot of help that's going to be needed around here. And I got a lot of faith in this community that they're going to step forward and step up to the plate. And so, like you said, probably not that many businesses that are going to be affected more than ours. And what I told Richard the other day is, in the meantime, as we sit here and sharpen our pencil and, develop new strategies and figure out, okay, when we can open, what we'll do. In the meantime, I'm just going around to the businesses and friends I have and saying, what can I do to help you? What can I do? Because right now I'm kind of sitting on ice, other than doing all of this, strategizing. We can't open. So how can we help? I hope it's my hope that the greater Winston-Salem community realizes that is a huge asset that we have, and something that hopefully if everyone can offer themselves up in assistance, it will make Winston an even better place to live.
You guys have had some, really fun things online, and I'll just thing I wanted to share with people is on their Facebook page, they have some really cool links that they've done some live performances. I think they're really good. One with Big Ron Hunter, another with Tim Easton, and you had a kids dance party one day. And I know that you guys are getting a lot of really good feedback from that. And I know you were talking about that earlier, Richard, when you guys had you were talking about that. But what other things can people do to support you now?
I mean, you know, tune in, watch some of our live recorded concerts online. You know, if you want to purchase one of our music movies that we're offering up online. We are thinking of what we're going to do when we reopen. That's when we're really going to need that support in whatever form or fashion that would be. And so stay tuned and stay well and stay supportive of particularly downtown independent businesses.
Well, if anything other changes, let me know and we'll post it on our social media with anything else that you guys want to do. And I just want to say, guys, I really am honored that you guys would take some time out of your schedule to talk with us. But and it went longer than I thought. But you know what? We hit some turf I didn't expect to. It was really an amazing conversation from where I sit.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for the opportunity, Jason. Yeah, we appreciate it.
Well, you guys are great. And tell Brian Ledbetter we said hello and we're sorry we missed him, your third partner. So, but we did interview him in a previous podcast a couple of years ago. So, also an incredibly interesting person. So check that out too. And thank you everyone for checking out our downtown podcast.
And thank you for what you and the partnership do, Jason. We are grateful.
Yep.
Likewise, thank you so much. And we're just here to help out our downtown. And you guys have a great day, okay?
You too.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode on the Triad Podcast Network. Our mission is simple: provide information, advice, and stories about the people and places that make the North Carolina Triad such a great place to be. You can find us by searching Triad Podcast Network on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, pretty much wherever you like to listen. If you like what you heard and want to support the show and those that contribute, we would truly appreciate a rating and review on your favorite podcast app. It helps spread the word along, as do your shares on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Triad Podcast. To get in touch with us, simply email info@triadpodcast.com. Thanks for listening.
This is the Triad Podcast Network.